numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It is Friday morning. Happy Friday. I'm Jared Smith in for Gil Alexander today. This is a numbers game powered by our friends at Zyn Nicotine. Kelly Bidlin here with us as well, live from the D in downtown Las Vegas. Kelly, let's jump right into it because we waited a whole week and we got what I called a hellacious blowout. Wasn't quite that bad final score-wise. NBA Finals game one last night, Boston 107-89 the final. Obviously, they covered the spread. Did it go over? Did it barely go over?
No.
Stayed under, right?
Yeah.
So that was a good call.
I know this as an over better.
Well, I know the first half was like right on the number, right?
Yeah, it was tighter because of that massive first quarter from Boston. Yeah.
So the first, it's actually funny. It's the exact opposite of how I thought in my mind it would play out, which would be first quarter under, first half under. I guess technically it did. And then eventually, I think in the second half, Boston just kind of went into their classic cruise control and didn't really sweat much. Although there was a moment in the game where Dallas made it interesting. I believe they cut it to 8.
Yep.
But right at that moment, Boston just hit the gas again, and it was bye-bye, see you later in the afterburner. So I think obviously what we learned last night is Boston's a really good team, and when they need to turn it on, they can. And they look very different with Porzingis. We haven't seen him in a month. He got hurt, and I think it was game three or game four of the Heat series in the first round. And Boston has looked great without him, but with him, Jason Tatum didn't hardly have to do anything last night offensively. Porzingis came in and scored a bunch of points. I think he scored like the first – I think he made 3 or 4 out of his first 5 shots, and he just looked absolutely fantastic. So Boston gets the win. They cover. Game stays under. Celtics now obviously a massive favorite in the series. I don't know if there's anything Dallas can do to win 4 out of the next 6 based on how deep the Celtics are.
Yeah, I'm trying not to overreact from game 1.
I know. It's hard not to after how that first half looked. It's very hard not to.
It is hard not to. Don't get me wrong. That was Porzingis was amazing. I was cautioning people for a week. Okay, we still don't really know. We can't assume this guy's going to be 100%. Then we get the report before the game that he's going to come off the bench. And well, I think
I'm sure that scared everyone who was on Porzingis overs.
Right. I mean, in the rear view, now that we're past this game,
he's not coming off the bench in game 2.
It looked like a smart move. They kept the rhythm going of what they had done
fair.
With Horford.
Maybe they really like Horford.
Yeah, it worked out well for those minutes when he was on at the beginning of the game, beginning of the second half. So I'm interested. That was surprising, though, simply because Porzingis doesn't come off the bench. He's not a guy that they've ever
he's
tried to do
that. He's been the starter the whole year.
Anywhere he's
That's
been
why
at.
I think he'll be back in the lineup at some point. Maybe not game 2. Maybe he needs to build his minutes up. How many minutes did he play last night? Was he north of 25?
No, he let's see. What did he finish with? He was only at 20. He was exactly at 20.
And I think that's probably a fair number. I think my guess is the point total is going to move up. And I don't know if the minutes will move up next game. And I think you might get an opportunity to go under if you're brave.
You mean the minutes?
The minutes won't go up, but the point total will. Like, his point prop will likely increase in game 2. But I don't know if he's going to play north of 25 minutes. Now, the blowout didn't help his cause. If it was a close game, he might have played more minutes. But maybe not his first game back. Maybe he wouldn't have gone north of 25.
It's a good point. I guess that is one unknown we have actually out of this game.
How many minutes is he really going to play? What's the max minutes he's going to play?
They said before the game there was no minutes restriction whatsoever. Okay. But, you know, it's easy to say that.
They'll say anything.
Exactly.
I
mean, look, I thought the Boston offense, and look, the Porzingis is where you got to start. First quarter, they were amazing. Porzingis was amazing. They came out and punched Dallas in the mouth, and it was tough for them to recover from there. I will say, Jared, I think after that first quarter, okay, if you look at, like, the next 2.5, because, you know, the second half of the fourth quarter was just garbage time.
Yeah.
Okay. The Boston offensive rating was just fine. It was good. It was kind of their normal level. Dallas defense settled in a bit more. What I'm way more concerned about as a Dallas backer, a guy who has Dallas futures tickets, is the other side of the ball.
Awesome.
Where series after series, the Clippers, Oklahoma City, Minnesota – we're not able to slow down the Luka options, right? The screenplay where it's going to open up options either for the alley-oop or in the corner 3, where Boston had that all covered.
Yeah.
And I think the most concerning thing for me, Jared, is a lot of this stuff we kind of knew what Boston was going to do coming in. And it sure looked like Boston spent a lot of time preparing for this, watching a lot of tape. And Dallas, and I even said this on air once or twice, Dallas kind of had the attitude of, nobody stopped us yet. Why are we going to change up anything? And, oh, boy, they got stopped immediately and all game long, because all this turned into was Luka Doncic ISO for the entire game, and that was the only thing that was working.
Yeah, I think the Porzingis stat that you put in the rundown here, second player in the last 50 years to score 20 and 21 fewer minutes in the finals, arguably one of the most efficient games in NBA Finals history. My guess is, and I'm assuming there are props out for game two, my guess is his points prop will increase, everything across the board will increase, and you as the bettor will have to make the decision if the minutes, the short time span he was on the floor was a blowout, the reason for the blowout, yeah. Or
14 and a half.
I don't remember what it was in game one.
I think it was right around there. I don't remember.
Yeah, my guess is that'll get bet up.
-130 to the over already.
Yeah, I don't recall what the game one number was. If you bet it, congrats. I saw some people I trust on the first quarter over that ended up hitting easily. The other big takeaway for me last night, besides the fact that the Celtics are really good, newsflash, the Celtics are a good basketball team. They're now a $4 favorite to win the finals. But the biggest takeaway for me last night was Kyrie. And I don't want to say it was because he didn't burn sage before the game or because there's just this magic juju when he goes to Boston, but he's 0-11, his last 11 games against the Celtics now. He did not look efficient. He was 6-for-19 from the floor. He only had 2 assists. The rebounding numbers were down. This is a guy that, when he's at his peak, is on the glass, dishing the basketball, getting into the paint and scoring. Of all the Maverick starters last night, he had the worst plus-minus at -19. So I think that is a bigger concern for me for Dallas's offense than Luka not making shots. And Luka was okay, 12 of 26. Not great. He made 30 points. He's 4 of 12 from 3. I would say that's average from 3. Mm. You know, 33%. I think he, in his mind, he probably didn't play well. But statistically speaking, he was maybe average, slightly below average last night. But Kyrie was well below average. The Gafford analysis we gave out, that his minutes were going to be down, that was correct. He only played 14 minutes last night. You saw Kleber at 19, Lively at 18. So I think that's the adjustment you see maybe with some of the prop numbers going forward, is you'll see Gafford's go down and you'll see Kleber, even though Kleber, we had Zach Cohen on yesterday, gave out over 2.5 points. I was on it. He finished on 2. He was on the floor.
He was on the floor.
If you tell me he plays 19 minutes, I say that prop goes over easy.
Yeah, that was one I was watching the whole time, thinking of both you guys, because we had seen the shooting troubles from him.
I thought the analysis was right. 19 minutes, he played the most of all the big men for the Mavs.
Yeah, I mean, Lively got in foul trouble. There's a lot of – it's like the Kyrie thing. That was big, right? But for me, that's bad game. He had a bad game.
You don't think it's bad juju?
No, I don't think. Okay. I don't think this is a bad
Karma's
sign.
Karma's weird with this sport sometimes.
I think what everything else on the Dallas offense happened was a bad sign. The fact that Luka was not able to work the screen game and find that open big man for an alley-oop because of the coverage.
He only had one assist. Is that that has probably the lowest assist game for Luka
ever,
maybe all
he's ever
year.
Ever had in
that's
the playoffs?
Wild.
One assist. What is it? Nine blocks for Boston. 9 assists for Mavericks. That's the biggest thing. That's all you need to know from this game.
Yeah.
The Dallas offense, the ball ended up sticking in Luka Doncic's hands, and they weren't able to move the ball around, find open guys like they had in past series. And what we all know, Boston's defense is really good. It was the second best defense in the NBA all season.
Yep.
Why I didn't think this was going to be a huge problem for Dallas, and they will make adjustments, but why I didn't think this was going to be a big problem, Jared, is it wasn't a problem. They picked apart Minnesota, who had by far the best defense in the NBA this regular season. They picked apart OKC, who at least has similar type pieces to what Boston has. The Clippers, they picked apart. It's going to be really interesting to see how they make adjustments going forward when Boston seemed prepared for everything that Luka Doncic was going to throw at him. And what it reminded me of, Jared, we talk about this a lot with Nikola Jokic. It was, we're going to take away all these passing options to wide open guys.
Yeah, make you a
and
scorer.
And you can score. Go ahead and score all you want.
Well, I think if you take that at its core, right, if you just take it at face value – then you would say Lucas points prop has value to the over. The assist prop has value to the under. We'll see what kind of adjustments are made. Usually the points prop hovers around. I saw last night, I think it was 31.5. Barely stayed under. Yeah. Probably a bad beat that it stayed under when you take 26 shots.
I think I saw some 30.5s out there. And yeah, he goes to the bench with a few minutes left in the game.
Yeah, the blowout. See, this is the – and I don't bet the NBA during the regular season. Yeah. It's in the middle of October, November, December. There's football. I'm focusing on football. And then we get to April. And then obviously things wake up. But then baseball starts to take some of my attention. And I would call myself a co-pilot in the NBA markets. Right. Like, I rely on a lot of people like you and JBT and other people I trust in the industry to kind of point me in a direction that at least is going to, hopefully make some sound analysis. When I watch the games now, it's obvious to me that Luka needs – there needs to be some adjustment made.
Yeah.
We'll see what that adjustment is. The number didn't adjust much for game two. It's still kind of sitting right around 7, which is where kind of we closed – last night.
Yeah. And it's side and total, I think, are really tough for me.
Yeah, not a big adjustment right off of game one.
I don't think I'll have much game two for side or total. I was on the over last night, so I got to see this Dallas adjustment first on offense before I can get back on that side of things.
Yeah.
Look, if you wanted to go on a day, if you were saying, pounding the table here going Dallas team total under next game, it's really hard for me to argue. The one bet I know I'll be making now that we did just pull up some player prop numbers, PJ Washington over 11.5 points. I thought one of the few things that looked like it was working with Dallas's offense was PJ Washington attacking these smaller defenders on Boston.
Love it. Fun Friday show plan. Lou Finicaro, Chris Felica coming up. This is a numbers game on VSiN.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
This segment of A Numbers Game is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches. There's only one number one draft pick. There's only one champion at the end of the season. And there's only one nicotine pouch brand in America that outsells the rest, and that is Zyn. Zyn is a smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free nicotine pouch that can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. Find your Zyn at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Friday morning, downtown Las Vegas here at the D. It is a numbers game. Jared Smith in for Gil Alexander today. Kelly Bidlin with us as well. And joining us now, VSiN contributor, does a fantastic job with the Bout Business podcast. He is Lou Finicaro. Follow him on social media at GamBlue. And Lou, we've got a full plate today. We were joking before we came on that not only hockey, UFC, and also the super regionals starting today in college baseball. We'll put the fighting and the hardball to the side for just a minute because the Stanley Cup is going to be awarded at some point in the next couple of weeks. Game one is tomorrow night down in South Florida. It's the Oilers and the Panthers. Florida is a favorite in game one, getting a lot of handle. They're a favorite in the series. Lou, your overall analysis as we start to get ready for a Stanley Cup final that is the longest in terms of distance between the two cities that we've ever seen.
As well. Well, first of all, guys, thanks so much for having me on. Pleasure to be with you. As far as the cup is concerned, this is a compelling cup, and it's really compelling simply because we have a team north of the border in Edmonton there. It would be so great for hockey to get and a Canadian team into the final, and we have that. And now I usually say that it would be outstanding for hockey to have a Canadian team hoist the cup. However, with Florida futures, I temper that expectation. That said, I do believe that the overall populace, we may get a few more eyeballs viewing this final series, and we may get a few more dollars on Edmonton, even though we're not seeing that right now, simply because of the desire to see a Canadian team hoist.
It is always interesting when you see the regional splits. I always say this, when there's teams in certain states that have strongholds at certain shops, the bias sometimes can impact the number. The Canadian markets, I don't think, have as much or any effect, frankly, on the American markets. But it is always interesting to see how the regional bias kind of plays into account. Brass tacks with this series. Panthers, I think, are the deeper team, but the Oilers have more firepower at the top. The great equalizer is always in net, right? Edmonton's gotten some pretty good play from Skinner and Nett. That's, I think, the only reason that they're in the final is because they were able to shut down the Stars the last three games of that series. But is that sustainable? Because we know what their core, Lou. Edmonton is not a defensive-minded team.
Well, traditionally, Jared, they have not been. However, their blue line has insulated Skinner and taken a lot of the pressure off of him. Consequently, he's playing with great momentum. And their defense is really the story of the Oilers in this playoff run. Now, can they hold up against the big, heavy, thick, pressured Florida forecheck? Florida's going to go out and try and bludgeon this defensive squad on the forecheck. And I do believe that you gave Florida the depth advantage. I agree with that. The issue, however, is can Florida stay out of the box? Because special teams swings wildly to the Oilers. And so Florida's going to have to play physical, but they're also going to have to play disciplined. And if they play physical, can soften that defense up, I think they can get to Skinner. I surely give Bobrovsky an advantage in net.
Great stuff. Lou Finicaro, of course, VSiN contributor, host of the Bout Business podcast. Follow him on Twitter at GamBlue. All right, before we pivot to some other sports, the futures market probably pretty settled right now, but maybe the awards market in the Conn Smythe Trophy market, you might be able to find a hair of value on the Oilers.
Well, if you're looking, if you're an Oilers fan and you're looking at the Oilers series price, you've seen it go up from 105 to 115. However, I think there's a great correlation that if the Oilers win, it's going to be on the back of McDavid Dreisaitl, and McDavid would be the Conn Smythe favorite. He's currently priced at DraftKings plus 195. So to me, especially holding Florida futures, the hedge or the cover or to protect myself surely would be McDavid Conn Smythe at plus 195 to squeeze out another 75 cents or so off of that series line over Edmonton being plus 120 or so right now.
Great stuff. All right. College baseball. So I used to work in college baseball. I love the College World Series. I think it is a fantastic event, and it's become more bettable over the last few years that we now have more markets available. I'm looking at the lines now. College World Series Super Regionals starts today, very soon, actually. The Athens Super Regional starts in about actually, they all kind of start in the next couple hours or so. I'm seeing Evansville alive in the Super Regional. They are the big long shot underdog against Tennessee this weekend. A lot of the other prices are a little bit closer to evenly matched. Is there a specific side, a specific total, a specific matchup that you think we should be isolating this weekend in the Super Regionals?
Well, one thing I would say is that I give tremendous credibility to teams that were in Omaha last year. They know how to get through regionals, super regionals, and we have three teams. A Florida team that everyone thought shouldn't be there that's playing their best baseball right now, Senior Laden. A Virginia squad coached by a guy that went to Creighton in Omaha who's from Omaha. If they get to Omaha, they will be laid down the crowd favorite. And then finally, Tennessee. See the number one ranked team. We know a number one ranked team hasn't won the College World Series in many years, and between Tennessee and Texas A&M, two SEC teams with stout pitching, you have the two chalks, and there's a as quick a breakdown on it as you can. I think Tennessee and A&M should be favored, but I think there's a dog or two in the regionals that could be considered.
Yeah, I love it. And I just threw those picks into a parlay here. So Florida's an underdog against Clemson, plus 135. The others are favorites. A&M's minus 425. Virginia's a $3 favorite. And Tennessee, as I mentioned, the big favorite against Evansville. But if you think those four teams are going to qualify for the College World Series, you can throw that into a parlay, plus 314. And again, I do like parlaying series prices because you can play games off of each other, especially if one series wraps up early and there's only one left. Again, it gives you flexibility and options. I know you can debate the merits and the plus EV value of parlays on your own time. We have UFC fights to talk about, right, Lou? I am not familiar with whoever's fighting this weekend, but I hope you can fill me in. Is there a UFC pick or bout on your card that is of noteworthy to us?
The main event is a 5-round middleweight bout between Jared Cannonier and a Russian fighting out of France, Nazarene Imavov. Imavov, a slight favorite here. He's stepping up in class. Cannonier has fought the elite in the division, only been beaten by Adesanya in a championship where he was hurt in that fight. And so I think Cannonier at an underdog price is a great value. He's at an underdog price because he's coming off an MCL surgery, hasn't fought in 18 months. But this is a guy that's fought at heavyweight, light heavyweight, and he's absolutely ripped at middleweight, can go 5 rounds. And I believe that once this fight hits the 3rd round, and I believe it does, that Cannonier will begin to show his color and class and start to take this fight over as it gets later.
Lou Finicaro's always ripped, I can tell you that, man. I love it. Great stuff. All right, Lou, before we let you go here on a Friday, who's winning the Stanley Cup final? How many games?
We're going to go Florida in 7, only because I'm selfish and I want to see 7 games.
And we talked about this on other shows. I don't think I've ever discussed it with you because, we don't get to do a lot together. But the NHL playoffs compared to the NBA playoffs in terms of the entertainment value, I don't think, Kelly, would you agree? Like, there's no comparison there.
You know what? As being the NBA guy,
I know, but
I feel like I should push back, Jared, but it's hard to this.
Very hard to.
For sure.
Very hard to push back on
Hockey's
anything.
He's always great in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Great journalism, Jared.
Thank you.
Great journalism, Jared. Getting the NBA guy to come my way a little bit. I love it. And Kelly, great answer. That said, the NBA's not done yet. Let's see if Dallas can come back, win a game or two, and make that compelling as well.
We didn't ask Lou about the NBA, but he gave us a little bit of a tease. That is Lou Finicaro, VSiN contributor. He basically covers every sport in the spectrum today. College baseball, UFC, yeah. NHL, and a little NBA analysis. Why not? Lou, have a great weekend, pal. It's great to talk to you.
Good luck, everyone. Thanks again so much for having me on, guys.
There he goes. Lou Finicaro does a great job, of course, with the Bout Business Podcast, contributor here at VSiN. So we had Stormy on yesterday, Panthers. Mm-hmm. I'm on the Panthers. You like the Panthers. Lou likes the Panthers.
I don't know if I like the Panthers, but I'm on them because everybody I know and respect is, which, you know how that goes.
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong with
that,
Jared?
We're all on the Panthers.
You know what's different about a numbers game with Jared Smith's in, by the way? The celebrity status is just so overwhelming that it demands 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 security guards to be out here just for Jared Smith. You got to be careful.
Guys, interviews after the show and autographs, call my agent. We'll charge you a lot.
Don't worry. I carry around headshots all the time for Jared.
Yeah,
I sell those for $20 a pop.
Yeah, and I'll sign them if you're nice. But you have to be nice. You have to buy me a drink. All right, we'll continue on the other side. I'll wrap up a little bit of this hockey stuff, and we'll start to touch on the baseball card today. Big card. I was looking at some Nerfy stuff this morning. Haven't pulled the trigger yet. Maybe we'll do so live on the air. Who knows? Things will get weird here. Friday, a numbers game on VSiN.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Friday morning, downtown Las Vegas, a numbers game powered by our friends over at Zyn Nicotine. I'm Jared Smith in for Gil Alexander today. Kelly Bidlin with us as well. And joining us now from the very prestigious Homewood Suites up in Saratoga. We were having some hotel analysis before he came on here. But Chris Felica of Fox Sports, of course, host of the Bear Bets podcast, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. So the Homewood Suites, that is the elite level status for you. Top tier hotel power rating right there.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at like that Courtyard by Marriott, Courtyard, Homewood Suites, Hampton Inn, Window, at that level, you get the kitchenette, you get the couch in the separate living area. Yeah, I think that would certainly get the power rating at the top of this hotel level. Now, if you want to go up to the JW Marriott level and the Westin and Ritz and the Quattro Seasons, now that's a different story. But for a good, just standard, solid, you know what you're going to get, and you're going to get a good sleep, and you can bring some stuff back to the room and throw it in the fridge. Hard to hard to top the Homewood Suites.
Yeah, this is the high-level analysis you come for here on a numbers game. Hard-hitting stuff.
I wanted to know what, of the years of Chris covering college football games going all over the country, does he have a favorite in, Stillwater,
Certain
Oklahoma,
town.
Or something like
you
that?
Stumped you stumped know? Him.
No, there's nothing favorite about Stillwater. Actually, I take that back. We actually, 1 year we were fortunate enough when we got to stay at the Golf Lodge on Oklahoma State Golf Course.
Oh,
the Golf Lodge,
that's fancy. And everything.
That place was awesome.
See, this is what I'm looking for.
Unbelievable.
Insider stuff.
We could
do an hour on college towns. I know in State College, if you want to go to the Nittany Lion Inn, to me, that is like the, you know, that's the top tier creme de la creme. But again, we'll digress. We'll get some thoughts on college football coming up at the end here. But we definitely want to get into Belmont. It's a unique year. It could be unique for multiple years because you move the location to Saratoga, shorter track. It changes everything, right? You go from a mile and a half right to now a mile and a quarter. It changes the entire tenor of the race. Sierra Leone's the favorite. You'll have Mystic Dan in there. Handicap the field for me. Is there any value here as we get close to the race tomorrow?
I really have a hard time seeing someone other than Sierra Leone or Mindframe win the race. We just don't know how good Mindframe is. He's only raced twice. He's had two open length wins, but at the same time, going from a maiden special at Gulfstream and an optional allowance at Churchill on Derby Day into facing Sierra Leone and the Derby win and the Preakness winner, that's a bit of a step up in class. We just don't know how good he is or isn't right now. I think he's the only horse that that possesses the upside to beat Sierra Leone. I mean, we've heard it with Sierra Leone. I thought he was the best three-year-old going into the Derby. He had a brutal trip. He probably would have won the race if he didn't lug in, or maybe Tyler Gaffalione had the stick in a different hand, or they would have made the change to the bit, a different bit like they did for this race. But I think if you add up Sierra Leone getting a shorter field, which will be less distance, less traffic, he's going to get an honest pace in the race with Dornick and a couple of others. You get the home field advantage now with Chad Brown in his own backyard. You got the equipment change. You got the rider change. It's basically put up or shut up here. I think if he doesn't win Saturday, I would be pretty surprised. If you were looking for maybe a price horse to put underneath in your exacta and maybe hit the board, I would take a look at the number two horse, Resilience, at 10-1 in the morning line. Belmont wasn't necessarily planning on running him in the race. He wasn't sure about the mile and a quarter. But at the same time, he was right there in the Derby after breaking from post 18, I think it was. And he just flattened out in the stretch because he had a wide trip. The horse has kind of grown up and matured since adding blinkers right before the wood. He won that race, ran really well in the Derby. He might be a little bit more forwardly placed in this race as well. So if you're looking, basically, in order to make money in the race, you're going to need to break up Mindframe and Sierra Leone. If it runs 9-10 or 10-9, unless that's the only bet you're making in the race and you're just going to hammer a cold exacta 9-10, 10-9, it's going to be hard to make money unless you can get Resilience or another horse in there to kind of separate the 9 and the 10 in the trifecta or in the exacta.
Chris Felica, Fox Sports, host of the Bear Bets podcast. In fact, I'm on his page right now on foxsports.com checking out his picks for the Belmont Stakes, which will be taking place at Saratoga this year. He listed out the exacta that he just mentioned on the air. Great stuff, of course, for a lot of the novice horse bettors like myself. I bet on usually three races a year. It's a different sport to bet on than picking a winner, in the Celtics-Mavericks game last night. So you did a great job laying it out. And, of course, understanding what you're betting is usually half the battle. All right, speaking of the battle, we got news yesterday. I think it was either yesterday or earlier this week about the college football playoff schedule. And I'll be honest, Chris, to me, any argument against expansion died the moment that schedule came out, because my counter every single time someone tries to argue against expansion: did you look at this schedule? 8 games. It's like March Madness for football. 8 games in that 10-day stretch, Christmas week, and then of course the semifinals and the championship, which is the more traditional that we've experienced over the last few years. But this schedule, pun intended, is an absolute bear.
You can have like two separate thoughts and hold them concurrently in your head at the same time. You can say that expanding the playoff hurts the regular season. You can say expanding the playoff really doesn't increase the number of teams that legitimately can win the national title. But at the same time, you can't sit here and argue that more football is bad.
Yep.
More marquee games in a playoff type setting. I'm going to watch, you're going to watch, Kelly's going to watch, we're all going to bet them, but we're all going to be fully invested in them. So, yeah, I think in getting weeks of football in between, like the Army-Navy game, and once you get the conference championship game, getting those through Christmas and New Year's, and then finally you get the break right before the title game, when I think on the 20th it is. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But like I said, does it mean that more teams other than, say, Georgia, Ohio State, and then maybe Texas or Oregon could ultimately win the national title? Probably not. But at the same time, getting maybe an LSU in the playoff, or a Michigan in the playoff, or an Ole Miss in the playoff, or
Penn State. Someone else. As an alum, I'm praying that we get in one of these years, Chris.
Dude, what's going on? I couldn't believe when I was looking at the preseason Heisman odds and like odds to be picking the number one pick in the draft next year. What are people like seeing with Drew Allen?
No idea.
I'm not.
I don't think we're seeing. I think what they're seeing is the program that he plays for is going to have a lot of high profile games. I'm not like the quarterback guru, but when I watched him play last year, I saw someone who was a little bit timid in the moment, and they didn't ask him to do a whole lot. And that's not going to fly in the Big Ten. That's certainly not going to fly in the Big Ten now that you got, you know, offensive teams like USC and all these great, spread it out type teams like Oregon coming in. But it'll be an interesting dynamic. I think you made a great point, too, because when you don't have the win equity maybe of a team in that lesser tier that can win the championship, but we see a lot of this in college basketball. FAU is a great example. San Diego State's a great example last year. The run themselves to get into the Final Four and the championship game, to me, is kind of the pureness of college sports. And I think that's what makes this tournament and this format a little bit more unique compared to what we've seen in prior iterations.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And maybe you get one of the a Boise, whoever your non-power four, I guess I should say now, a conference team that gets in there. I mean, maybe they do wind up pulling an upset as well. And who knows? The Big 12 is such a balanced conference. Whoever gets in there, maybe they win a game and create a little excitement. Say, like, it's look, I liked it at four. I thought it should be hard to get in. But like, I'm not going to sit here and complain about having more football.
Yeah, I think more football, right? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I think more football, good for all of us, and that is going to be that 10-day stretch right there between the 20th and New Year's. I mean, it always is good with the bowl games, but now you get that initial kick with those those first round games right out of the gate, makes that bowl season just that much more intense. All right, Bear, before we let you go, a big month, couple months coming up for footy. We got the Euro, we got Copa. I'll give you the floor here because I'm like a duck in the water. I have no idea. I'm just trying to search for some nibbles here with the soccer. But what are you looking for with the international competitions coming up this summer?
Yeah, we got Euro starting a week from today, and then we got Copa starting on the 20th. And I made some bets this week where the first bet I made was the Netherlands to make the quarterfinal at around plus 135 is what I found them at. If you look at where they're probably going to finish second in their group behind France, and that's going to get them a pretty favorable draw. Once you look at the knockout round, they're going to get like a second type place type team in the round of 16. And then the quarterfinal is probably ultimately where they'll get knocked out. But the Netherlands to reach the quarterfinal plus 135 was something I looked at. And then I played England at plus 170 to reach the final, and France at plus 190 to reach the final. They're probably both going to win their groups, which means that is the most likely semifinal matchup on the bottom half of the draw. Something would have to go very wrong for France or England not to reach the final. So again, you're getting plus money on both. As long as one of them do make the final, you're in a good spot there. So you can get a nice little scalp, little arb there potentially. And then in Copa, I played Argentina to win at plus 175. They're going to be on the easier side of the draw and likely avoid Brazil and Uruguay until the final. So they're the best team. They're deep up front, even beyond Messi. I think Argentina should be in the final, and then you're going to be in a position, depending on who they play, either just let it ride or take the underdog for a little bit to guarantee yourself a profit.
Great stuff. Chris Felica, Fox Sports, host of the Bear Bets podcast. Enjoy Saratoga. Enjoy your Homewood Suites, and enjoy that kitchenette, pal.
I will. The rain looks like it's folding off tomorrow, so it's going to be a great weekend.
Love it. Great stuff. Could not ask for a better segment covering multiple sports with our pal Chris the Bear Felica. All right, on the other side, we will wrap up a little college football talk, and we'll get into some baseball awards markets to wrap up this Friday show. Down the stretch, they come here on A Numbers Game. This is VEASAN.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are so close to crowning an NBA champion, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code VSiN. That's code VSiN for new customers. Get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, final segment here on a Friday. It has been a fun Numbers Game journey with you. Myself, Jared Smith, in for Gil Alexander today. Kelly Bidlin with us, of course, as well, live in downtown Las Vegas. Let's wrap up the show with a little more baseball futures talk, because I want to move the conversation to the National League, the senior circuit. But before we do, we got some answers to our trivia extravaganza during the break. The reason why Fred Lynn was hot on my mind is because Shota Imanaga, who we'll talk about in a moment in the National League, is doing something that not a lot of people have ever done, which is perhaps win the Cy Young and Rookie of the Year in the same year. Fernando Valenzuela, one of, I think, the only one to ever do it. There might have been one other player that has done that. But But Fred Lynn, all right, well, forget that I even said that. But Fred Lynn is on my mind because he is the only person to win Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same year. He's not a pitcher. I'm sorry for even mentioning him in that same breath as Cy Young. Man. But that is why Fred Lynn was top of mind. But speaking of
Valenzuela, the only one.
Valenzuela, the only player to ever win Rookie and Cy in the same year, and it's ironic that it's the National League with the Dodgers. It's ironic that we get a National League pitcher trying to do it again with Shota Imanaga, but I'll be honest. If you've watched Imanaga the last two starts, I think underwhelming is the word I would use. Now, it hasn't impacted the market a whole lot just yet. Wheeler was the favorite to win Cy Young. He's still the favorite. Imanaga's still the second favorite, despite the fact that Imanaga's had two, I'll call them, clunkers. The Rookie of the Year is still Imanaga, as I would call it a pretty substantial favorite, but the gap is shortening with Skeens now in the rearview mirror. He was a $4 underdog before his last start against the Dodgers. Now Skeens a $2 underdog, but I would still say Imanaga the favorite at plus 115, saying it's about a 45% chance he's going to win the award, where Skeens is more in the 30-35% range. I do think the name that I would really look to is a guy who pitches tonight in the Bronx, and that's Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Two reasons why I think this guy is a good bet. So I bet him plus 650 earlier this week. I bet him before the Skeens start, hoping the Dodgers would get to Skeens. I wasn't really right on that prediction, and the odds shortened on Skeens. The Imanaga fade, to me, is becoming more pronounced by the day. And it doesn't mean that this guy is going to suck down the stretch, but for him to pitch to a sub-2 ERA for the entire season is bonkers. He doesn't have that kind of stuff. He has, I would call it, average stuff with elite location. And he has an elite brain when it comes to pitching. He's not a thrower, he's a pitcher. But he's now made, 12, 13 starts? The book is out. This is a guy that I think doesn't have the kind of stuff that Yamamoto has, which is just a little bit more, I'll say, variety when he's pitching. His fastball is harder. He'll throw 96. Imanaga's more in the 92-93 range. Obviously, Paul Skeens is like Superman. But the reasons against Imanaga and the reasons against Skeens, I think, are pronounced enough for me to view the three pitchers at the top of that list as a little more equal than what the odds are saying. I think Imanaga has pitched over his skis the first month. He's come back to earth the last couple of weeks. Paul Skeens is like a shooting star. He's going to burn hot. He's going to burn fast. But I don't think he's going to burn for the duration. Whereas Yamamoto, he went to the first game of the year. He struggled in that game. He's come back since and has pitched very well. His numbers are better than Skeens in terms of wins above replacement, but he is significantly beneath Paul Skeens in the Rookie of the Year odds board. I think Yamamoto and Skeens should be closer to even. In not even odds, but even in terms of their standing. And I think Imanaga deserves to be the favorite, but I think he's gotten, again, over his skis to where you will see, if he keeps pitching like this, he's going to really drop. But even if he's average and Yamamoto's above average, I think the gap between Imanaga and Yamamoto should be much tighter. And I think Skeens, I don't think he has as much win equity in this market as we think, because I don't think he's going to pitch the full season.
Yeah, I can only chuckle when we talk about this, because I think it was Jason Weingarten last week or on Wednesday who said this, where it feels like everybody's trying to get out in front of betting against Skeens and fade him, because he's just, like you said,
a shooting star.
I think a lot of people are kind of assuming he's at the top, right? But Jason kind of put it this way.
Or
he's just really all that good and we're all going to be wrong at the end.
He is going to be really good, but that doesn't mean he's going to win Rookie of the Year. Again, this is why the awards markets are so baffling for the average public Joe bettor. It's easy to have an opinion on a game, to watch the game, and to have it play out in the way that you thought that game was going to play out. It's not like after the game is over, they're going to the booth for three random judges to grade who wins the game.
Right.
That is how awards markets work.
That'd be awesome.
Like figure skating.
Yeah, it's like gymnastics.
When I was in college, I took a class at Penn State called The Introduction to Sports Media, and they had us write dissertations, thesis papers at the end of the year. And my topic was, what is a sport? And my conclusion was, if the sport is decided by the people on the field, it is considered a sport. Baseball, a sport. You could argue that the umpires have a lot of influence. All right, that makes it less of a sport.
Mm.
The end conclusion was the purest sport is a marathon. It's I'm going to beat or like a shot put.
I've always said if you can comfortably drink beer during it, it's not a sport.
But my point being, the definition of a true sport in the purest form of the word is something that is decided purely by the competitors that are competing in that whatever competition. Awards markets are weird. The people competing do not have any say in who wins. All they do is compete. And then the judges in the booth, in this case the voters, are the ones that have the final say, which is why you, as a viewer and a bettor, have to remove your bias from the equation. Is Paul Skeens going to be the best thing since sliced bread at the end of the day? He might. But he also might pitch 70 innings this year and might be shut down by August 30th. How will the voters respond to that? That is the question you have to ask yourself. Not if you think Paul Skeens is the best rookie
pitcher
in baseball. Doesn't
matter. Yep. We talk
irrelevant.
About it all the time. It's irrelevant.
Irrelevant.
Your handicap. Erroneous.
Erroneous on all counts. Erroneous.
Yeah, you're handicapping what you think the voters are thinking.
Yes.
And it is.
That is the only thing that matters.
It's very tough because we spend a lot of time on this show. We spend a lot of time on this network. When it comes to betting, it is hard for you not to have your own personal bias and feelings on these things. But you have to remove them. You have to remove them. And usually you can at least look with a lot of these at what historically has come into
voter cash. Trends.
Yes, but of that stuff changes. Some of that stuff changes.
That's why these straw polls are very helpful. Now, the straw poll
is really
helpful.
I'm glad you circled back to that, because I think, Tim Bontemps been doing it in the NBA for a long time.
I made a Jokic bet 2 years ago based off that straw poll at like plus 120, plus 130 to win MVP. In like a week, he was like minus $2.
They're great. What I love about them, it doesn't just help us bettors. I love the idea of it forcing to make these voters think about it multiple times throughout the season.
I didn't think of it from that angle.
Because you can also wonder, I think a lot of times we wonder.
They just wake up.
How serious are these guys taking it? And I know we've got a lot. I know there's a lot of people, including myself, that had Victor Wembanyama tickets or Defensive Player of the Year. One of the things that's killed me after the fact, Jared, it's the guys like Kendrick Perkins and stuff saying, we should rip away the award from Rudy Gobert. And I'm like,
what?
And you're like, the sample size, it pains me more for you to stand up there and say, I voted wrong after 10 games of the playoffs. Like that is way worse than you screwing up the vote in the first place to me. Like the fact that you can change your mind like that, and I know you're a voter. Like just goes back to this is the difficulties of betting these markets.
You're not handicapping. You have no idea what these guys think. What you think the players should be. You're handicapping a voter and what they think. You have to take your brain out of your skull and try to insert it into another human's brain. It's very hard to do. It's impossible to do unless you're like some kind of weird mad scientist in Young Frankenstein. But that is the only way to accurately assess the probabilities of a specific player winning a specific award.
Ichiro, MVP and Rookie of the Year? We just got that tweet.
Thank you for that. Fred Lynn and Ichiro, the only two players that have won MVP and Rookie of the Year in the same season. It's not going to happen this year because I think Imanaga is going to fade. He's definitely not going to win Cy Young. I think Yamamoto, plus 650. If he pitches well in the Bronx tonight, shuts down that Yankees lineup, who might be without Juan Soto, by the way, I think his odds will shorten when we recircle on Monday. Great stuff by our guests, Lou Finocchiaro, Chris Felica, Kelly Bidlin booked it. Awesome stuff behind the scenes as well, behind the glass. This is a numbers game on VSiN. Have a great weekend, everyone.